The new Starz series, Marianne George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hi, everyone. It's Sophia. Welcome to Work in Progress. Hello, sweet friends. Today, we are definitely going to get smarter about what our bodies need, and maybe how to treat them a little nicer. I'm a fan of that. Today's guest is none other than Roddy Devluka. She is a plant-based cook, a mission-driven entrepreneur, and the co-founder of the adaptogenic tea brand, Juni. With her background as a dietitian and nutritionist and her studies in Ayurveda, Roddy shares everything from her recipes, health tips, wellness videos, natural skincare, and beauty, and how to live a conscious lifestyle. I'm lucky enough to know Roddy through her wonderful husband, Jay Shetty. And since the day that I met her when I first did his podcast, I have just adored her. She is the kind of person whose passion is infectious. She's the kind of person who, when you see her in a room, you run to her for a hug. She is just a gatherer and a connector. And I love everything about her energy, and I love the way that she shares her wisdom with people. She is so passionate about building a health and wellness community that encourages people to understand themselves, not to live up to some crazy, unattainable standard, but to really go inward to understand themselves, as I said, their environment, everything they put on or in their body, and more. She's been featured everywhere, from Women's Health to Forbes to The Today Show, Access Hollywood, and so many more. And her book, Joyful, is available for purchase now. It is an abundant and inviting book that has more than 125 plant-based recipes and really teaches readers about being kind to themselves. Let's dive in and figure out how this inspiring woman learned how to do what she does. Roddy, I'm so happy to have you on the podcast. In the years that we've known each other and been at things together, I'm always so happy when I see you walk into a room. You're such a light.
Thank you. I feel the same way when I see you.
Oh, you sweet soul. You're just like, you really are one of the sweetest people. And I'm so into what you do and the impact you make in the world. And I was like, I want to ask her every question on the show.
Okay. Let's do it. I haven't ever got to sit down like this. So
I know. This is fun. Okay. So before we get into life as it is now, I actually really like to rewind with everyone who comes on the show, because people follow you and they know your work and they know you have a book coming out and, you know, everything you're up to now. But I'm always curious when I sit down with someone who's, you know, carved out this sort of beautiful space for themselves in the world. If when you look back at your life and you look at, you know, the little Roddy who was 10, let's say, do you see in her pieces of the woman that you are today?
That's such a good question. You know, every time I get asked about my childhood, it's such a weird thing, but I feel like I only know my childhood through pictures and videos of myself. I feel like I have
really?
Such, yeah, I really have faint memories of my childhood, and I probably need to unpack that, but I really don't remember. But I remember being a really happy child. Like, I was so lucky to grow up in a family where my mom and my dad were just amazing and wonderful. And I felt like I had a very secure, safe childhood. And I'm really grateful for that now. At the time, it just felt like my normality. But, you know, now having grown up and seen how, you know, life can turn out for some people, I was like, wow, that was really special to have had that in my life. Yeah. So all I remember is from all my videos and stuff, I'd be always wanting to be in front of the camera. I was always the person, but that was up till that age. And then I got really shy. But when I was younger, I was the one that was like always making jokes in front of the camera and really loud and bubbly and very excitable, definitely growing up. So I wasn't shy when I was young. I would be the one that it would be my cousin's birthday. Everyone's like singing happy birthday to them. And I'd be the one blowing out the candles and making my cousin or my sister cry. So I definitely loved a bit of attention growing up for sure. But yeah, I think honestly, those are my memories. But then as I grew up, I kind of forgot who that person was because I think I started getting really conscious about certain things and you know, the way people perceive you starts to penetrate through your vision of yourself. Mm. And that person is someone now that I look back, I remember her. But for a long time, I was like, I couldn't have related to 10-year-old me.
Wow, that's so interesting. Do you think that shyness kicked in when the dynamics of girlhood started to change?
Yeah, definitely. When, you know, because when I was growing up, regardless of whether I was, you know, had chubby cheeks and I was like a little bit more, technically, I guess, then overweight is what they would have described me as then. But I don't think I had a concept of people judging me because I was just a kid and everybody was like, she's so cute. And, you know, they'll like squeeze my cheeks and it would be a sweet thing. Whereas this weird switch that you go through from being a cute little kid to being someone that then suddenly gets judged for the way that they look and, you know, going to a school where there's boys and girls and, you know, you start noticing, it's such a subtle thing, but you start noticing who people gravitate to, what they start looking for, what they start looking at. And so without me even realizing, I think it all sort of started shifting because of my externals. And I wasn't even aware that I was shifting with it.
The way society can kind of press in around us and squeeze us and make us feel small is hard. And, you know, we've got all the data and the stats on girlhood and what young girls experience and when they get self-conscious and when the sort of bad messaging of the patriarchy gets in. And it's like, you know, on the one hand, I'm so glad we have proof so we can work on building better systems. And on the other hand, I just am like, no, it's so hard.
It is.
Did you start as a young person to find your way into cooking? Or was that something that came later? Like,
I think being from an Indian background, I had so much flavor, you know, I experienced so much flavor from such a young age. Mm-hmm. And my mom had a full-time job, but still every single breakfast, lunch and dinner was homemade without fail.
Wow.
And so it was just magical because she was like a Wonder Woman. Everything was just, nothing was too much for her. And it was done with so much love and thought. And, you know, there was so much thought about the food that was coming onto our plate, the colors, the vibrance of it, the spices she was using, the quality of the food she was giving us. And so I think it really elevated my palate from a young age. My grandmother was such an incredible cook back then too. And so it was kind of part and parcel of our culture and our family dynamic, that we were just used to having incredible food. And so I think I got a thirst and a taste for it then, but also watching my mom, like watching the way that she poured love through food, it became my love language, I think, through watching that and experiencing that. And so I wanted to then share my love in that same way for other people without even realizing how that had impacted me. And now I look back and I'm like, of course I fell in love with food, because my mom fed me with so much love and gave me so much to appreciate about food.
That's so beautiful. And it strikes me as such a really special way that in your own house, there was pushback on all of the things that are hard for young girls, because instead of it carrying through everywhere in your life, you actually got to go home and feel loved around food and have a healthy relationship with food and have a familial dynamic. Like it, when I hear you talk about it, it just, I can feel the joy that you had in your kitchen at home.
Yeah, definitely. We always had meal times together. And I'm sure as a teenager, I remember being very averse. I was like, why can't I just go out and eat with my friends? Why do we always have homemade food? Why can't we have takeout? And now I'm like, God, the things that you really don't value when you're a teenager. And then what you start valuing when you're older, they are so different and usually the opposite. And so it's been a really amazing journey to unpack that and also find more and more appreciation for my mom and how she raised me too, and seeing how that, you know, molded who I am now.
So when you sit today and everything in your world really revolves around teaching.
How
did it happen? Explain to us how your career now arrived in your life.
Yeah, good question. Honestly, not by my doing. I can honestly say that, like, it was, you know, when I never had a thought or a dream, like whenever I saw people on TV or if I even saw people in the public eye, it was never something that I envisioned for myself, or not even because I didn't think I could do it, but it was just not what I wanted. I wanted to be a dietitian in a hospital. I wanted to be a pediatrician, but I didn't get the grades for that. Like every Indian, I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a doctor, didn't get the grades. And then I wanted to be a pediatric dietitian. And so I studied to do that. Like my plans were to work in a hospital and work in, you know, pediatric clinics. And that was my dream. And that's what I had always envisioned myself doing. And so the platform that I have now, honestly, and I always talk about this, I'm like, that came because of people's interest in Jay. people started hearing about him and they were like, oh, I wonder who his wife is. And then somehow they'd end up, you know, coming to my page, which, by the way, at the beginning was a private page called Veggie Vegan Veda. And it was just the place I was sharing recipes with my friends and family because I used to cook for them.
Yeah.
And so, but then when it started shifting and I saw that dynamic shift where people were coming to me, I was like, well, this is not going to be a fan page for me and Jay, because that's not what I'm here for. I'm not going to make this a place where, you know, it's just about him or just about me. And then I had to really think about, like, what is it that I can offer to the world? And I think I was going through a phase then of figuring myself out and really understanding what it is I want. I moved to New York. I couldn't work as a dietitian because I was not on a work visa. And so I did all my studies and then moved to New York where I couldn't use any of it. And so I just put myself into study. And so that's when I was studying Ayurveda. I was doing my yoga teacher training and I was doing a lot of work on trying to figure out myself. And so all of that combined, I was like, now I feel like I don't have to share about me, but I can share about all the things I'm learning. And I was just so grateful for the teachers I had. Like I feel like I'm such a grateful student of many great teachers. And the fact that I've been even able to have those teachers, which not many people get to have in their life. They may not come into the contact with the same people that I have. I just think that I can be a bridge and share what I learn and pass it on to other people in hopes that, you know, it can elevate their life as it did mine. What I'm trying to say is that it wasn't something that I planned or that came to me, but I thought when people start coming to me, I was like, well, I better give them something good to, you know, to stay for, even if they're not coming to me for me, at least let me try and share something that keeps them here.
Yeah. We'll be back in just a minute, but here's a word from our sponsors. And that's so wise to know that because, you know, you have a life with a person who's a public person, that there would be interest and to figure out a way to give it a purpose.
Yes.
You know, the sort of side effect of my day job is that interest. Mm-hmm. And I joined social media, on my way to show up in response to an ecological disaster in the South. Yeah. I went, oh, this can be a purpose for me to talk about cause, to talk about the environment, to talk about women. And it sort of changed, you know, everything in my world. It allowed me to really become an advocate in the way that I'm passionate about. And it, in a way, was because I was really uncomfortable with the attention placed on me as a person. So I needed to figure out how to use that attention for good that went everywhere outside of me into the world.
Totally. And I think without the concept of service and how am I contributing to other people's lives and the world, so everything ends up feeling so meaningless. And I'm when everything is to do with the surface level, or if it's to do with the externals, you can get bored of it so fast, right? Like everything feels so boring and so meaningless and dull without having a purpose or a deeper intention behind it. Mm-hmm. And I think I had felt that deeper intention when I started, you know, studying spiritual practices, and when I started learning about Ayurveda, and I was like, there is so much more to life. And I felt it changing me. And so I just kind of saw it as my duty. I remember one of my teachers said, he was like, knowledge is so useless if it's not shared, because it then builds up in you and it creates ego in your heart, because you think, I have this knowledge, and slowly that knowledge is yours to keep, and it defines who I am. But actually, if you see yourself as an instrument or as a vessel for knowledge to pour through you, then you can, you know, it really stops ego building up in your body. And so it is something that you learn and you share. And that's a big part of it, whether it's on social media, whether it's to your children, whether it's to your partner. It's like, that is the cycle of receiving knowledge.
Yes. And it reminds me of that phrase, once you know, you owe.
Oh, I love that.
And I love it. It's like, when you're given knowledge, you owe it to others to share it. And the sort of cyclical nature of that allows for it to grow.
Yes.
And I think that that's so special. When you guys moved, oh God, and what a crazy thing. I mean, immigrating and then having all those years of study that you just completed essentially be useless to you in a different country. How, instead of getting depressed about it, you decided to keep studying. Mm-hmm. And how did Ayurveda become core to you? And can you tell listeners who might not know what Ayurveda is, what it is, and then tell us how this happened?
Yeah, definitely. So Ayurveda, Ayur means life, Veda, well, life or longevity, and Veda means knowledge. So essentially, it's seen as the science of life, and it's a 5,000-year-old practice. It's a health science that revolves fully around how we can heal our bodies naturally through what nature provides us with, and through understanding deeply what our body needs on an individual level. Mm-hmm. And so I will start off by saying I cried a lot when I got to New York. That was part of my journey. I was crying pretty much every single day for a good few months, because I felt really lost in, you know, where I was and what kind of had to relearn and recreate the narrative that I had already created for myself and how my life was going to be, and fix that completely, because moving away was never in my plan. I told Jay, the only thing that I want when we get married is to have a house that was within 3-mile radius of my mom, my sister, and my grandma, because they all live within 3-mile radius of each other. And we got the house, and we lived in it for a whole 2 months, and then we moved. So it was definitely a shock to my system. And so not to sound like I'm playing a violin, but I was literally walking around the streets of New York crying most of the time. And then I was like, you know what? It's the first time in my life that I had to sit with myself, because I'm the youngest child in my family. Everybody did everything for me. I was saved by them all the time. It was like, I was always surrounded by people who, in one sense, were an amazing support system, but at the same time were almost a crutch for me.
Yeah.
And I didn't figure out who I was during that time, because it was completely, it was formed by what everybody else thought around me. And I never had to decide that for myself. And so it was the first time I got to somewhere and I was like, oh my God, I have no idea who I am or what I want. I don't know what bed sheets to pick. I don't know what forks and knives to pick, not because I don't know where to get them from, but because I don't know how to make decisions for myself. And so that's when the growth started. And I thought, I can't just sit in my sadness forever. Like, I have to distract myself, learn. And I, you know what it was? It's one of those moments where when you feel that way, and you know when, whether it's God or the universe, or it just so happens, but the right people come into your life at the right time. Mm-hmm. And all you have to do is say yes. Mm-hmm. And so for me, one of my teachers, Divya, she's an amazing Ayurvedic chef and teacher in New York. I met her and I was just amazed by what she was doing. And I was like, can I just follow you around and intern with you? And I'll do everything for free. And just, I just want to learn everything that you're teaching. And so it was the first time I'd come into contact with Ayurveda in terms of study. But when I started learning about it, I realized that culturally, my mom and my family had practiced it for years, because whether it was using spices when I have coughs and colds, or whether it was putting a turmeric patch on my cuts when I was, you know, when I was unwell, like there was just so many aspects that were already weaved through my life, but I got to learn it at a deeper level. And so in one way, having changed from being a dietitian in a hospital where I felt some things weren't exactly how I would have wanted to share it, to then come into contact with Ayurveda, where I thought, wow, this is exactly what I've been looking for. And I love the individual nature of it. It's so specific to each person, and also unique, that how can it be one size fits all? In my mind, that doesn't make sense, because we're all so different. And so I fell in love with it from, you know, the first chapter that I read about it.
That's so cool. And I don't know if we've talked about this or not, but, you know, I've had asthma my whole life.
Yeah.
And it's such a tough thing to deal with. And really, you know, it's connected to larger issues of inflammation. And so much of that can be triggered by foods. Definitely. And when I was 27, I was in a particularly bad asthma flare. And a friend of mine recommended that I go see an Ayurvedic doctor she was working with. And I did like a full 8-day Ayurvedic cleanse, and was off my nebulizer by day 4. My eczema had cleared up. Like, it was so immediate, that because my body was being given what it needed and also being given the chance to heal, it was like all the levels that were keeping me sick lowered in my body. And it really did change the way that I look at things. And I've never been one who's ever, like, you know, quote unquote, stuck to like a diet or a plan. I can really commit for a while, and then I'm always like, but the pasta. But I will say, I can really tell when I feel out of range, or the travel or the airport food or whatever is getting to me. And it's always something I feel like I can go back to. And I'm just so excited that Joyful is available for purchase now, because I'm like, I need more of it in my kitchen. Like, I can't always have to lean on someone else, you know, to do it for me or to tell me what to eat. How did you take this world of study and what you began to offer to people as a growth of what you were doing for your friends and family online, that then became a bigger public platform? Like, how do you get to a point where you realize you have to write a book? Or is it just that everyone who follows you has been like, please write a book, we need it, we need it? Like, what's the process here?
Yeah, because I also had asthma growing up, by the way.
You did?
I was taking an inhaler until I was in past college. Yeah, I would have to take it whenever I worked out. And I don't recommend this to anybody who's got asthma that's listening, but I haven't had taken my inhaler for over 10 years. And I did it through breath work, through changing my diet. When I turned vegan, that seemed to have been a big, you know, dairy seemed to have been a big trigger for me.
Yeah, dairy is a big trigger for me.
And even when I get, because I'm allergic to cats sometimes, and it can bring up asthma. And I have used breath work and essential oils to like really, to not have to use my inhaler. And again, I just want to say that it's not an individual thing, that just works for me. But every time I get wheezy, even like learning how we can use our breath to expand our lungs and our airways is so powerful. So I just wanted to share that with you. And then how did I come to write this book? Honestly, I never felt ready. I never even thought I would write a book. I started getting approached to write books from different publishers. And I thought, you know, At that time, I always said I never just want to write a cookbook. I love cookbooks. But I felt like what I had learned through cooking and the practices and the wellness rituals and the parts of cooking beyond the food, like the consciousness that goes on behind the scenes, is such a vital part of how we even interact with food, that that just doing recipes didn't feel like I was doing what I'd learned justice. And so whenever I was speaking to people, I was like, I could write a cookbook, but I also want to write something that's got a lot of other things weaved into it. And so I went out to write a proposal. And so my, you know, agents were speaking to publishers to find someone to help me write a proposal. And anyway, it turned out that instead of them saying that they'll help me write the proposal, my publishers were like, no, we want to buy the book. We want to be part of the book. And so I didn't even end up writing the proposal or know what was going to be in the book before I ended up saying yes to writing it. And then I obviously knew that I was going to be plant-based recipes because I've been plant-based for over 10 years now. And I was born vegetarian, so that was always going to be what the recipes were about. But the next day after I signed my contract, I was, it sounds a bit cliche, but I was sitting in my meditation and I was really trying to think about what is it that I want this book to give to people? And what is it that I've always wanted through everything that I do for people to feel? And honestly, the first thing that came to mind was joy. And I was like, everything that I have ever wanted to do, even if it's in people's lives that, you know, that I, my personal friends and family, my goal has always been to bring people some sort of joy in their life through food, through entertainment, through being funny and goofy, like whatever it is, it's always been that. And so after I came up with the name, which came before anything else, I was like, now I know what I can talk about. Like everything has that thread. So whether it's the recipes or the rituals that I've included in there, everything are all the things in my life that have brought me so much more joy and helped me maintain joy in my life. That it all just slowly came together. So 3 years later, the book's out, by the way, because it took me 3 years. Yeah. And I created 190 recipes, which I had to cut down to 125, which was a very sore process to try and
That's okay. They can go in the second book.
Yeah, exactly. That's what everyone keeps saying. And I feel really happy about it. It was also a big thing for me to complete something. Like, honestly, I'm someone who will be really excited about starting something and I'll be like all in, and then suddenly I'll like completely forget about it or I won't be able to complete it. And so this was almost, you know, it was something I did for myself also, where I wasn't even thinking about the results of once it came out. It was like, wow, I actually completed something. So for me, it was like a sense of confidence in myself that I can actually create, go through the process and actually create something. So yeah, there was a lot of reasons behind doing it, but I'm so happy that it's here and that I can share it with as many people as want to read it.
Oh, that's so cool. So when you talk about the experience behind cooking, you know, the deeper sort of relationship we have to our food, to the way that it enables us to take care of ourselves, how do you write about that? How is it different than just a cookbook? You know, what will listeners, when they order this book after hearing this conversation, like what will their journey be going through it with you?
Yeah, so the book starts, it goes through the cycle of the day. And so it goes through from morning to evening, and it follows the rhythm of nature in terms of, well, linked to Ayurveda. So whether it's the recipes, which go from being lighter to the largest meals in the afternoon, because our digestion is the strongest when the sun is at its highest, that's when our digestive fires are the strongest. And so you have the bulkier, heavier, more dense recipes in the middle. And then it tails off to having the lighter meals, the soups, the lighter bites that you can have in the evening. And so along with that, I've done morning rituals, evening rituals, afternoon rituals, breath works that help you, help to carry you through your day. So I've used breath work to really help navigate my emotions throughout the day. I can get quite nervous and anxious. And so whether it's a breath work in the morning to relieve your anxiety, to a breath work to energize you midday, or a breath work to relax and calm you in the evening, I've gone through those breath works in there. There's also conscious eating and mindful cooking in there. The practice from picking what vegetables you're going to have to being more intuitive with your body to understand not what is this person telling me what to eat, or what recipes did this person post online, or, you know, this person saying this meal changed their whole body and their whole life. No, what does my body need? And how do I tune into that? How do I understand that when I'm eating something, I don't just have to think about how it's making me feel in the moment, but how is my digestion after? Is it making me feel sluggish? Is it making me feel energized? How is it affecting my skin? How is it affecting my body? And so really tuning back into our body, we've, you know, completely give away the power of our health to other people, when actually there's so much that we can harness in ourselves just by taking a moment to observe and identify things within ourselves. And so I talk about that. And then also the practice of when you're cooking, it's not just about throwing things into a dish, which sometimes we have to because of time, but how can I put intention and deep prayer and create food which just doesn't nourish my body, but that I can pour prayer and love and care into the food to be able to nourish me deeper than just my physical body. And you know, people sometimes say, oh, that's so woo-woo. And I'm like, no, because when you eat food from someone that loves you, you feel it. Like when I eat food that my mom or my grandma make me, I will copy the recipe exactly. And it will never turn out the same, because there is something about the energy that we pour into the food that we're creating. Mm-hmm. And so I talk about that. And then there's prayers and meditations you can do just before taking the food in, because gratitude is such an important part to our digestion. To actually eat in a relaxed state and with deep gratitude changes the way the food even absorbs and assimilates into our body. And so, it's, you know, consciousness to me is about how can I be more present in every moment, including the moments that I'm eating, drinking, living and being around other people. And so I've essentially just poured everything that I know about that into this book.
That's beautiful. And now a word from our sponsors who make this show possible. The new Star series, Marianne George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son George on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Stars and the Stars app.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are the old world picturesque shores of Europe calling you? Set sail on an adventure with Avalon Waterways. Enjoy an elevated cruising experience Avalon Waterways offers smaller ships, bigger experiences, with fewer people, and more of, well, everything good about river cruising. Don't just dream about quaint towns and cobblestone villages. See them for yourself and make lasting memories. Discover limited time offers today at AvalonWaterways.com.
You know, when you talk about how the energy that we cook with and eat with can actually change how we feel in our bodies, how we absorb food, is it true that, to your point, like gratitude changes absorption? Does that actually lead to having better gut health? What are some of the sort of cool facts in that regard that you can share with us?
I mean, even if you think about it, let's say a lot of people, when they come, like when I used to have gut clinics, or when I used to see people for IBS problems, one of the main things that you'd ask them is, where do you have stress in your life right now? Like, where is the stress? Like, where are you stressed out? And are you noticing any patterns between where you're stressed and how your gut is? Like, I remember even simple things of when I used to go into exams and I used to be so nervous, my gut would start playing up straight away. And yeah. So there's been so many studies to show the link between anxiety and our gut. And that's been proven. But then if we reverse that and think, well, what's the opposite of feeling anxious? They say that when you're in a, you know, grateful mindset, you can't be anywhere else. Like, you will be present in the moment and you'll stay absorbed in what you're doing at the time. And so even having those moments of gratitude kind of pushes away, even for those moments, the anxieties that we're feeling, the fear that we're feeling, all the other things that are, you know, going through our mind. When you are able to give something full focus, like our digestion, you kind of have to remind your body what's happening in the moment. And so when you are eating your food, looking at it, like it says that when you first see food, that is the time that your digestion first starts. Like, you start salivating, the enzymes on your tongue, they start to become alive because you've started signaling to your body that food is coming, your digestive juices start flowing. And so if we're distracted and we're all over the place, our body doesn't even get the signals it needs to start thinking about digesting. We literally are looking around, doing everything else, shoving things in our mouth. And then suddenly, maybe 10, 15, 20 minutes, maybe even an hour later, our body's like, oh, you've just eaten. Okay, now let me start producing those digestive juices.
Wow.
Versus getting our body prepared, like you would go for a run and you'd put your shoes on and you'd put your coat on. And in the same way, we have to prepare our body for what's coming, because usually we're shoving it down and our body is ready for it.
So is this why people say that it's so important to sit down when you eat instead of stand?
Yes, definitely. And also gravity. Like, if you think about it, everything travels so much faster when you're standing. Even if you're in water will just flow through you if you are not sitting and sipping on it slowly. And that's why you'll notice that if you stand and gulp a lot of water down, you'll need to go to the bathroom way faster than if you're sitting and sipping it. And so, yeah, some of it is, you know, scientific and factual, and there are studies behind it. And other parts are just noticing your body and realizing.
Intuitive.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I was speaking to someone yesterday about how important things are to be science-backed and how we really need clinical studies for things. And I said, you know, the actual fact is, a lot of these things that have been passed down, they've been passed down from generations to generations to generations, but they've had no financial benefit for passing it down. They've had no ulterior motive to pass it down, except to heal their children, their family, and the people. Mm. And so with a lot of clinical studies, like, you know, back in the day, we were told cigarettes were good for us, and now they're not. And then we were told vapes were good for us, and now they're not. And so I'm not saying clinical studies don't have a place, but I think there is a big part in just, let me see what feels good for me, rather than listening to what other people are telling me to do. And so there is science, but there's also the magic of intuition and understanding and connecting back to our body to actually get the evidence that we need.
Well, and one of the things that's so cool to me is, as you mentioned, you know, Ayurveda is a 5,000-year-old practice looked at culturally as medicine. And I think it's so cool now that there are so many studies being done, and the lore of this is how this system works for you, this is how you can take care of your body, is also being scientifically proven. There, like, for me, I think there's nothing cooler than when your intuition and the science meet, because I'm like, I love it. Like, yeah, that's what I crave. And it's exciting to know, you know, as we said, like, I've never been able to cure my asthma, but my asthma is so much better.
Yeah.
Now that I have not only the medicinal tools that I need, but the dietary knowledge, the breath work, the exercises, all of it has added up to me being so much healthier now than I was 10 years ago. And I think there's something really beautiful about what you're talking about, how the science of Ayurveda really is, it's universal, but it's individually applied so specifically. Yeah. I'm wondering if there's folks at home that are like, this sounds really cool, but I don't know much about it. I'm really pressed for time. This sounds expensive. Like, how complex a reprogramming are we talking? Because, like, I don't necessarily have an hour at lunchtime to practice gratitude while I eat. So can you give us, like, the inside baseball on the sort of small changes that make the big difference?
And that's honestly what I base my book on. I'm like, look, no one's got time to... You can pick and choose different rituals throughout the book and different practices that you find you're attracted to the most. And so you may not have time to do an hour of gratitude, but you may have a moment to just say, thank you so much for this food. And I'm so grateful that my body's going to receive it. And that's it. Like, you can say a quick prayer.
Yeah. And by the way, that was like 30 seconds.
Exactly.
Great. I love a 30 second life changer.
Me too. And then, you know, the other thing which I was going to say when you brought up what we were just talking about is there are so many studies now done on the benefits of spices, like curcumin, that, you know, there are actual studies that have been done on this. Now, I know it just based on my experience of it. But when I've started seeing people actually doing studies and showing the benefits in our bodies, big part of the book and my intention with it is I want people's spice cupboards to be filled by the end of this book. Spices have such incredible, subtle, preventative mechanisms to help build your immunity, boost your digestion, you know, boost your mindset. Like, there's so much that spices can do. And so another quick tip is go to your supermarket your grocery store the next time you are you're going shopping and pick three spices. Pick three spices that you want to incorporate into your food this week.
Okay, are there three you would recommend people start with?
There are the queen spice blend in Ayurveda is coriander seeds, cumin seeds, and fennel seeds.
Oh, three of my favorites.
Oh, good.
I love this knowledge.
And as I start my morning, and if you don't even want to add them into your food, I start my morning with hot water with those three seeds in equal parts in hot water boiled.
Just make a tea.
Oh, yeah. CCF tea. It is amazing. Coriander seeds, cumin seeds, fennel seeds, all in equal parts, a teaspoon of each. Boil it in some water and drink that tea. It is, all three of those have been found to improve digestion, to stoke your digestion, because when you wake up in the morning, your gut has been resting for almost 8 hours. And so it kind of needs to be, again, a reminder of, hey, like, food's going to be coming in shortly, but it also helps the detox, because when we end up sleeping overnight, that's when our body does all of that cleaning up. Like, it starts, we don't need this here anymore. I don't need this here anymore. Let me start taking it out of the body. And so this helps to, one, clear out and remove toxins from the digestive system. Coriander and cumin are incredible blood purifiers too, because we, you know, so many free radicals and everything get built up in our body through our environment, through what we're eating. And so it's really subtle, but amazing. And I recommended it to so many friends and they're like, my digestion is so much better. And in India, actually, fennel seeds are eaten after every meal. So when you go to an Indian house or you go to India, after you eat your meal, the practice is in restaurants everywhere, they'll have fennel seeds for you to chew on after. And fennel seeds are, and as soon as you eat them, whether you've got discomfort in your belly, bloating, or gas, I guarantee you, you will be releasing it, because fennel seeds have almost like an immediate effect on that. So try it in a tea. So I'd say tea, add spices, a 30-second or like 5-second gratitude prayer before you eat. And then just noticing. Notice the things in your life that, like, Ayurveda isn't something you have to be 100% in on. Actually, everything is Ayurvedic, because everything is just about, is this beneficial for my body or is it not? And it's the observance of that. And so take time to observe yourself. That's a part of Ayurveda. Take time to notice, this makes me happy. This is what I'm allowing into my senses. When I look at this person, it makes me happy. When I look at this book, it makes me happy. Like, increase the things in your life that bring joy to you and start decreasing the things that feel like they don't add value. And that's through food, through lifestyle, through the people that we're around.
Mm-hmm. And for folks listening who might want to incorporate, you know, more of a plant-based diet, but maybe aren't ready to do a whole switch, me included, what are good ways for people to eat enough protein when they're trying to go more and more plant-based?
Yeah, good question. I've been focusing on that a lot this year. Like, I'm trying to eat 100 grams of protein minimum every single day. And yeah, it takes planning and it takes an adjustment. But I also say, try to go towards things that are already naturally plant-based if you are making switches, because it's the things which are made to be substitutes that can end up actually harming our health a little bit more than doing it good. And I understand the substitutes once in a while, but trying to base all your meals around it might actually not make you feel great. And so whether it is a cup of lentils, whether it is soya beans, whether it's, you know, tofu's been given a really bad rep back in the day, but there's been so many studies now to show that it takes such a large amount to affect your health in a negative way. And that's with everything. Anything in too much quantity can be bad. And so, yeah, your beans, your lentils, the tofu, creating like, what else do I use? Hemp seeds, nuts. It's really about the little things, because I think when you eat meat, you're used to getting a bulk of your protein in one go. Whereas also the animals that are getting that protein are eating plants. And so there is ways for us to get protein from plants. We just have to do the area to get in. So I have a whole area of this. There's literally a section that says, will I get enough protein being plant-based? There are plenty of ways to do it. It just takes a little bit more meal planning and getting yourself adjusted to it. But I also say, don't go all in at once. I turned plant-based, and I was only going from being vegetarian to vegan. And I did that over a 6 month to a year period. And I let go of the last because I loved cheese. And you don't have to do, everything all at once. Like, pick a few days a week you want to make some plant-based meals and start enjoying them. You know, it takes a lot for our body to start adjusting, especially if you've been eating meat for 30, 40, 50 years of your life. Like, we can't expect our body to just completely adjust. And so give yourself some grace, like do what feels best for you and slowly but surely make progress, you know, towards a plant-based lifestyle.
I think that's really important advice. I mean, particularly in America, I think we get really obsessed with like hashtag goals. Like, I'm going to change my life this week and institute 40 new habits and give up these things. And, you know, it's the reason all of our New Year's resolutions always fail. So I think giving yourself permission to make changes slowly feels nice.
It does. And more sustainable.
Yeah. What are things you would recommend people eat every day? Or is there anything we should be eating every day? And I know the tea is one thing, but I know you said too much of anything is a bad thing. So do you find it's more about variations, or are there like a couple of core things that should be in our daily eating practice?
I think the macros can be on a daily basis. So you make sure you get your carbohydrates, your proteins, your fats, your healthy fats. But in terms of the same thing every day, I really do believe in seasonal eating, but also in having variety in your diet, because our gut microbiome, which is the healthy bacteria that end up digesting the food in our gut, it thrives off variety. It actually is fed by different vegetables and fruits and different ingredients. And so if we limit ourselves to having certain things every day, it may serve us in the summer and it may be amazing for us in the summer, like having lots of smoothies and salads, but actually in winter, our digestion might not be able to handle that. You know, our digestion changes through the seasons. And so I actually don't recommend having anything throughout the year. You'll notice your body actually rejecting certain things at certain times of year and craving them at other times. And so I'd say making sure that you're getting an abundance of colors on your plate. That's something I would say without a doubt is what you should be aiming for. So different colors on your plate coming from different parts of the food group. So your carbs, your proteins, your healthy fats, and your fruits and your vegetables, an abundance of different colors on your plate for that will make sure you're getting all the different vitamins and minerals you need, because all the colors represent different vitamins and minerals that they have in them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't like giving recommendations of like eat this every day, because.
But that's helpful to know that we shouldn't box ourselves in that way. I mean, one of the things that's been really illuminating for me, I feel so lucky to live in California, is, you know, I really do try to make it to the farmer's market on the weekends. And when you start learning what's in season, it does really, at least it did for me, it really changed my understanding of, to your point, what I should be eating. Because we do have these wild grocery stores where everything's available all the time. But what does that mean? And so I love being able to shop a little more locally, whether it's at the farmer's market or signing up for, you know, a CSA, if you have that in your area, because then you start buying and receiving what's in season. And it is nice to eat more, you know, with the growing patterns of the things we're ingesting.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, when people have local honey and it helps with their hay fever or it helps with their allergies. Well, if you think about it, our body tunes into the nature around us. Like I keep saying this in interviews, but I really mean it. We are part of nature. We don't live in nature. And so actually we are so, when we create disease in our body when we lose sync to nature. And so when we start eating out of season, when we start eating things that aren't grown on the soil that we are living in and that living on, and that we are the nature that we are around and the environment that we're around, it affects our body in that same way. So actually eating the foods and the fruits, the vegetables, the herbs that are grown on the land that we are living on, it really does make a difference, because that's what our body is wanting and craving. And so, by the way, it doesn't mean you have to eat seasoning all the time. You feel like a cherry where you feel like eating cherry pie when it's not cherry season, eat your cherry pie. But trying, it's always about a balance. So if you right now are 60% eating not seasonally and 40% eating seasonally, try and tip that to 50-50.
Yes.
And see how you can do that. So
progress, not perfection.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And now a word from our sponsors. The new Starz series, Marianne George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
So when you think about eating seasonally, does that mean that your morning routine also changes through the seasons, or do you have a pretty set way that you like to wake up and start your day right?
So my morning routine is pretty much the same, but what I may adjust are the types of breath works that I do, or the spices I'm using in the morning, or throughout my day, or the grain I might be using if, you know, I need something that feels a bit lighter during winter season, or during summer season, but I want something a bit more heavy and hearty during winter season. Mm. But generally my practices stay the same. And so I'll wake up, I do my breath work and meditation, or before that I'll brush my teeth and do my tongue scraper, which I recommend. If there's one Ayurvedic practice you do, it's using a tongue scraper. It will change your life. And then I'll do my meditation, my breath work, and then I'll have my tea, and then I'll go for my workout, and then I'll have my breakfast afterwards. And so I'd say I've had that routine for a good 8 to 10 years now.
Wow, that's incredible. And obviously, you know, you're married. You're not just exercising this routine solo on your own time. You have a partner in the house. So does Jay have a morning routine like yours? Have you led him down that path, or did he have his own and you just sort of do them in tandem?
So I wake up a little bit earlier. I've always been an early riser. So I wake up a bit earlier, and then he'll join me for meditation near the tail end of my meditation, halfway through. And then honestly, the rest of our day, except for on weekends where, you know, we might read together at the same time, we actually have quite a separate morning routine. I go to a different place to work out. He goes to a different place to work out. And so, yeah, I'd say we've learned what works best for us, because he was trying to force himself to wake up at the same time as me and, you know, do all the things I was doing. Serving his body, because he needs a lot more sleep than I do. And the way that he likes to practice meditation, you know, he might meditate quite loudly because we both do mantra meditation, and I prefer having softer, quieter meditations in the morning. There will be times that we overlap, but generally we've found what works best for both of us separately, and quite like it as a me time in the morning.
That's so cool. You know, obviously you talk about how your relationship shifted your work, and you know, you guys moved to the States together, but if you take us back, how did you two first meet?
Okay. So we first met, so I met him before he became a monk. Briefly, I was, you know, volunteering at the time? My mom was volunteering at the temple that he was training to be a monk at in London.
Wow.
And then my mom met him because he was showing her how to do some services at the temple, how to, do the different activities she was doing there. Mm-hmm. And the next time my mom went there, she introduced me to him. At this point, he was a trainee monk and he was training there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I really want to get my daughter involved in some of the youth stuff here, but I don't know where to start. And he said, oh, I'll give her details to my sister. She's involved in the youth group. He was trained to be a monk and wasn't talking to women. And so he was like, I'll give her number to my sister, and she can, you know, start coming to some of the things. So I spoke to his sister and I started coming to a lot of the different classes and the spiritual retreats that they were doing. And I just loved it. And I really felt like I'd found a place that felt like home for me. And so I started going there, but then we didn't like talk to each other. He went off, did his monk training. I was going to some of the classes he was doing. He was doing a lot of courses at the temple, but then he also lived in India and the UK. And so I knew of him, and I knew him as almost like a teacher versus being someone that I was thinking about in that way, because he was going to be a monk, like he was in full robes and stuff. So I was thinking about him that way. And then fast forward a couple of years, when he ends up leaving the ashram, I had already become best friends with his sister. And at that point, when I heard, I kind of told her that I liked him a little bit. And she was like, well, you know, I don't think he's thinking about that right now. And I was like, okay, fine. And then she told him and he was like, oh, she's the only person that I would have thought about wanting to get to know, you know, after coming out. And so long story short, we ended up talking and yeah, we ended up just really getting along and we both just had the same values. And I think that was it for us, that our foundation, we both wanted the foundation to be a spiritual relationship and where we could grow together in that way and where we both can connect to each other and God together. And I think that's always been the foundation for us. It started that way and we keep, you know, using that as our North Star to constantly keep reconnecting with that purpose.
Yeah. And then, I mean, what a wild shift. You know, you got married in 2016.
Yeah.
You guys both have these big public jobs. You know, his podcast is so successful and your business is so successful. As everything evolves and grows, is it really that core of, you know, commitment to growth and a desire to always stay centered that you think allows you both to stay centered in your relationship as well as individually?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like we're both committed. He's taught me to be more committed to growing myself. And I really appreciate so much of what he learned through his monk training is what he had to allow me to learn once we were married, in the sense of he had to allow space for me to do a lot of growth that he had already done. And he very patiently, lovingly was like, he's never been someone to be like, I've done this and so you have to be like this. Everything has always just been such a gentle, loving, patient, like, observer. And whenever you need help, I'll take part. And if you don't, I'll stand back and you do it yourself if that's how you want to. And so it's been wonderful being able to have someone in my life that leads by example versus force or, like, you know, telling me I have to do things in a certain way. And usually having someone that practices so beautifully, it kind of makes you want to be a better version of yourself too. And so it really practices what he speaks about. And so for me, even if I am wanting to get really, I'm a Leo and so I'm really fiery. And even if I'm like, no, I want to do it this way and I'm stubborn, and he'll just be like, okay, well, I'm not against you right now. Like, I'm not trying to be against you. We need to figure this out together. And I'm like, no, just fight with me right now. Just have fight with me.
Like, I want to roar.
Yeah, exactly. But I'd say that, yeah, our opposite natures help. We're both actually really different to each other. But at the same time, even if our personalities are different, our core values and what we both want to constantly keep at the center of our life has always maintained the same. So even if our externals have changed, whether we're in a different country, whether we have more or less, whatever it is, the purpose behind how we want to live our life has always maintained and stayed the same. And yeah, I think it's a blessing to have that with someone, to have the same, to have the same values, because sometimes that can really differ as time goes on.
Yeah.
And I speak up till this point, who knows? I may, like, we may not be different people later on, but for now, it seems to have stayed the same.
But I think that's really beautiful, you know, that you continue to grow together. I think, to your point, you never know, you know, what's going to happen. I mean, I've certainly dealt with thinking I know where something's going and then realizing you can't cross a bridge till you come to it. And sometimes you get to the bridge and you just can't walk over it with someone. Mm. And I think there's a real importance in always being willing to check in with what you're capable of and what someone else is capable of. And there's such a beauty when, you know, couples like you two continue to figure out how to grow together. It's really inspiring.
Yeah, and it takes so many, there's so many ups and downs to it, right? Like, there's never a moment in relationships where everything is just a constant up. There's so many ebbs and flows to it. And so there'll be, you know, months on end where maybe we're not matching in the way that we want to do things and the way that we connect with each other. And, you know, we'll go through periods where we feel disconnected, but then we get to connect back again. And I think, you know, it's a false narrative if we constantly tell ourselves that life should just be easy and relationships should just be a walk in the park, because we all change so much. There are weeks on end where I just don't feel like I'm sadder than usual, and I don't know why, and I just am. And so then that reflects in our relationship. And there are times where I am so exhausted, I don't feel like I can give beyond myself because I'm still trying to figure out things that, you know, I'm so focused on what I want to do. Maybe I don't have the capacity to go beyond myself and do that. And so there are so many different dynamics to relationships. Sometimes one person is going to have to hold a larger space than the other. And sometimes, you know, that doesn't happen. And so you can disconnect and connect back again and get stronger and then get weaker. And I think that is what a relationship is. And so it's wonderful that we both have the same values and the same principles and what we want to do. But there's obviously always been this ebb and flow of how we've got back there.
Yeah. That's so amazing. When you think about your aspirations, do you set them for yourself as an individual and also together as a couple, or do you try, like, I guess my question is, how do you figure out what to collaborate on and what to keep separate?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd say when it comes to work aspirations, I honestly, like, I feel like a lot of things have come to me rather than me having a goal or a journey in mind for myself. And so I think I've always been on the journey of trying to figure out what it is I want to do. And so I've never really felt certain in that. So for me, there's always been a, I don't know what I'm doing, and should I even be doing this? And am I doing the right thing? And, you know, that's what I'm like. And Jay's like, has a clear, as like, there is no question of what he wants to do. He knows what he wants to do, how he wants to do it. He knows what aligns with it, what doesn't. And he's extremely clear about that.
Yeah.
And so I'd say I'm still figuring it out and trying to figure out what even my aspirations are and how I want to live my life and the things that I want to do even in the next year. And he's someone who has a 5-year, 10-year plan of, not even a plan, but a destination and like a direction of where he's going. So a lot of that, you know, if that's the case, I'm like, if whatever you want to do, I fully support. And if it doesn't align with what I want to do, I will let you know. So if there may be a lot of events I don't want to go to, and there may be a lot of things because of my personality and what I don't find joy in that I don't want to do, but at the same time, you're not going to catch him watching a cooking show with me. Like, you know, like it's such a, we have such different ideas of even what like our successes look like, or what I'm not a numbers person at all. And he's like, he's so good at figuring things out. He has all these numbers in his head all the time. Like, he's really good at that. And so, yeah, I'd say we've both always tried to stick to, well, when I was lost, I tried to jump on his bandwagon and try and be like, oh, I want to do everything you're doing. And I want to, you know, be that. But then I realized if it's not your aspiration, that runs out fast. Like, you don't get joy out of it because you're just following someone else's path and it's not yours. Yeah. And so when I started realizing that, it was, you should be happy doing what you're doing and I should be happy doing what I'm doing. And hopefully, if and when those two collide and they become one aspiration, then great. Otherwise, there's plenty of time in the day for us to be able to do our own things that we want to do that make us happy, and then connect in during the day about things that we both enjoy talking about or discussing or being part of. And so we have one company together, we have our tea company together. And that's something that we really enjoy doing. But again, he's part of different calls to the call that I'm on, because I do the creating and I love creating the recipes for it. And he's so good with the managing of teams and the finance calls, which I honestly, I'm not. And so
don't want to be on those.
We're kind of doing different things on it.
Yeah, that's really cool. It just sounds like a really healthy dynamic where you each get to maintain your individuality and you have a space where your relationship and your partnership really flourishes.
Yeah, exactly. We try to do that. Again, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Well, but that's also being a human.
Yeah, exactly.
But with all of this, you know, and we're so close to the start of the year, and you've got the tea company and you've got the book and your business is thriving and your relationship is thriving. Like, as you look out at the year ahead, with so many goals that now have the check mark next to them, you know, especially 3 years to write a book and now here it is. What as you look forward right now, feels like your work in progress? Is it something professional or personal or maybe a little bit of both?
Honestly, I've been having a deep craving to go back to study again. Something I feel I've had a thirst for since the end of last year, where I felt a bit depleted in knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, I'd say one of my biggest goals this year is like, I'm reading 6 books at a time at the moment and I'm loving it. Like, I just have such a deep desire to study and learn and to just throw myself back into being a student. And so I'd say that the only part I know about what's coming up is the fact that I want to study. Apart from that, I honestly just don't know what's going to come. And after my book, I was like, what are you working on after your book? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. You don't know, but I know that I want to learn more. And I feel like the more I learn, the more I'll be able to share. And so I definitely am going back into a phase of being a deeper student. And apart from that, when it comes, I will tell you.
Love it.
Sorry, I hope that was a good enough answer.
I love it. I also think it's really important to celebrate where we are and not necessarily constantly. It's like you've got this major achievement and people are like, what's next? And I feel like I want to look around and go, well, can I just enjoy this for a minute? You know, so that's great. Enjoy it. And yeah, we can nerd out and read books together. It's all I want to do.
I love that. I'll definitely I'm reading right now.
Oh, yes, please. I want the full list. thank you so much for coming today. I love spending time with you.
Me too. Okay, we have to do a date. We have to set a time to spend time together.
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay, great.
And when I come over, I'll bring you honey, local great. Honey.
And I will cook you food.
Okay, deal. This is a perfect hang.
Oh, thank you again.
Thank you, honey.
The new Star series, Marianne George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Stars and the Stars app.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Hey there, parents and teachers. Are you tired of feeling like every day is a battle of wills with your kids? Let me tell you about something that changed the game. Love and Logic. Love and Logic isn't just another parenting or teaching strategy. It's a mindset shift that empowers you to raise responsible, respectful kids while keeping your sanity intact. With Love and Logic, you'll learn practical techniques to set limits with empathy, give your kids the tools they need to make smart choices, and build relationships based on mutual respect and understanding. Love and Logic stands behind their methods with a 1-year money-back guarantee. Try it out risk-free. If it doesn't change your life, we'll buy it back. Plus, you can get 10% off with code IHEART10. So if you're ready to say goodbye to power struggles and hello to peaceful, loving relationships with your kids, it's time to give Love and Logic a try. Visit their website or call today. Your sanity will thank you. Love and Logic, because parenting and teaching should be a joy, not a chore. Visit loveandlogic.com.